Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine your brain is under construction. Every single worker, every neuron, every glia started out as this foundational piece, a kind of scaffolding called a neural stem cell.
Right. These are called radioglia progenitors, or RGPs.
And these RGPs, they face this this ultimate identity crisis every single time they divide.
It's a constant decision.
Do I copy myself to keep the construction project going, or do I transform into a specialized brain cell, a neuron, to, you know, build the final structure?
And if you get that decision wrong, you disrupt the entire timeline of brain development. You can end up with too many neurons too fast.
Or not enough stem cells left to finish a job.
Exactly.
But here's the wild part. We're talking about a decision that, on a microscopic level, often just comes down to which daughter cell gets the hand-me-down parts.
Which one inherits the old cellular machinery, and which one gets the shiny new stuff?
It sounds like biological fate is just inheritance. And for decades, we've had these two major clues about how this choreography works.
We did. We knew that the cell's physical structures, like its internal skeleton organizers, are distributed asymmetrically. And we also knew the molecular signals, the sort of communication software, are also handed out asymmetrically.
So two separate sets of instructions for asymmetry, both happening at the same time. The big question has always been, how do they talk to each other? How do the physical parts and the molecular messages coordinate to make one single life-altering decision?
And that is the core breakthrough of the research we're getting into today. We're finally connecting the age of one of the cell's oldest structures, the centrosome, to the precise delivery system for the molecular signals that tell a cell what to become.
We've found the protein that coordinates the whole dance.
We have. It's the physical link.
That is the ultimate aha moment. We're connecting the cell's architecture directly to its molecular signaling. So today we're celebrating the work of Sheng Zhao, Su Guo, and their colleagues. They're from institutions including the University of California, San Francisco, and the Chan Zuckerberg Biohub. Their work is just a remarkable leap forward in understanding how this fundamental cellular architecture dictates the fate of neural progenitor cells. And they did it using some really advanced nanoscale imaging.
To really get this, we first have to understand the stakes for the cells we're talking about. These radioglia progenitors, the RGPs, you have to think of them as the absolute foundation of the developing central nervous system.
And their superpower is something called asymmetric cell division, or ACD.
That's it, exactly. When an RGP performs ACD, it creates two non-identical twins. One daughter cell stays in RGP, which guarantees the stem cell pool, you know, cell for news.
And the other one.
The other one starts down the path to becoming a specialized cell, like a neuron. Mm-hmm. If they stop doing that and start making two neurons every time, the whole progenitor pool just runs out way too fast.
Okay, so ACD is the goal. But how does the cell make sure one daughter gets the stay signal and the other gets the go signal?
That's where those two asymmetries come in. First, you have the molecular side. It's called notch signaling asymmetry. The notch pathway is the most crucial molecular cue for self renewal.
So to keep the future stem cell as a stem cell, it needs a lot of notch signaling.
A lot. And that signal is carried on these tiny little cellular delivery trucks. They're called endosomes, and they're loaded with a notch ligand called delta D, or DILD. The cell has to make sure all these DILD-loaded trucks go to the self-renewing daughter cell.
So the DILD endosomes are the VIP packages that need a specific delivery address. And we already knew that process needed a protein called PAR3 and the dynein motor complex, which is basically the cellular engine, right?
Precisely. Now, put that molecular motor aside for a second and look at the physical structure. The second clue is centrosome asymmetry.
The cell's organizing center.
Right. The microtubule organizing center. When it duplicates during division, it does so semi-conservatively. So you end up with two centrosomes that are actually different ages.
You get a mother centrosome, the original, and a daughter, the new one.
Exactly.
Wait, how do they actually tell the difference? Is there like an age marker on them?
There is. The mother centrosome is consistently marked by a protein called CEP83. And crucially, the mother is often more active. It has a higher capacity for organizing microtubules. So it's a consistent difference. One cell gets the old guard structure, the other gets the new guard.
Okay, let me try to connect the dots here. We know the molecular VIP packages, the DILD endosomes, need to go to one side. And we know the oldest physical structure, that mother centrosome, is already on one side. But we didn't know how the mother centrosome knew to grab those VIP packages and direct them. Is that what this paper finally shows us?
That's it exactly, the missing link. They hypothesized that the coordinating protein was something called pericentriolar material 1, or PCM1. PCM1 was known to hang around the centrosome, but its role in connecting centrosome age to molecular trafficking was, until now, purely hypothetical.
Okay, so let's unpack how they confirmed PCM1 was the key. The first hurdle must have been just finding a model system where you could even track this microscopic choreography.
For sure. They chose zebrafish embryonic forebrain RGPs. What's so great about zebrafish is that their RGPs divide really predictably along the anthropofeature, or AP, axis.
Ah, so you have a consistent map. You always know which side is which.
It gives you a consistent geography anterior versus posterior, so you can definitively label the self-renewing pole. That kind of predictable orientation is absolutely key for tracking asymmetry.
And they didn't just stop with fish. To make sure this was a conserved mechanism, they checked their findings in human iPSC-derived 3D cortical brain organoids. That's a huge step for showing relevance.
A critical step. And on top of that, they used classical clonal analysis to track the fate of these RGPs over about 10 hours. They had a genetic marker for neurons so they could easily see the outcome.
So they could categorize the division, two progenitors, the ideal one and one, or two neurons.
EP, PN, or NN.
Exactly. That tells them the outcome, but how did they actually see the choreography happening inside the cell? I mean, these endosomes and proteins are just impossibly small.
This is where the methodology gets incredibly exciting. They needed nanoscale resolution, so they used a technique called label retention expansion microscopy, LRXXM.
Expansion microscopy? That sounds like something out of science fiction.
It kind of feels like it. Instead of just relying on better lenses and light to magnify things, the technique actually physically expands the tissue sample itself.
You're kidding?
No, you embed your tissue in this special polymer, and then you make that polymer swell up like a sponge, maybe 4 times its original size.
So you're literally blowing up the cell's internal landscape to get a better look.
Exactly. By physically expanding the tissue, you increase the distance between the molecules you're trying to see. And this lets a conventional microscope achieve the resolution you need to see these tiny interactions, like PCM1 physically binding to PAR3 on the surface of an endosome.
Without that, you'd never be able to confirm it.
It would be impossible to see.
That's amazing. And they weren't just taking still pictures, right? They were using molecular tools like morpholinos and knockouts in the zebrafish to remove PCM1 and then watch the chaos in real time.
And the findings were, well, they were immediate and stark. First, they confirmed PCM1's location. Its distribution is, in fact, highly asymmetric during mitosis. It was always enriched on the posterior side of the cell.
And which centrosome was always posterior?
The mother centrosome, the old one marked by CEP83.
So the cell's internal GPS is linked to its history. The oldest structure gets the coordinating protein, and that oldest structure is always located where the self-renewing cell is supposed to form.
Precisely. They also found PCM1 was concentrated in this central zone, right near the cleavage furrow where the cell divides, which is exactly where the dealed endosomes gather. In a healthy division, PCM1 and the dealed endosomes move together like a team, ensuring they both get handed off to that posterior daughter cell.
Okay, now for the moment of truth. What happened when they took PCM1 away?
The whole system just broke down. When PCM1 was knocked out, that asymmetric segregation of those crucial dealed endosomes, it was severely reduced. They lost their destination.
And what did the real-time tracking of individual endosomes show? I'm picturing little lost delivery trucks.
That's a great way to put it. The single endosome tracking data was very telling. The endosomes didn't stop moving. In fact, their average velocity was actually higher.
So they were moving faster.
Faster, but with no direction. They were just zipping around randomly. High speed, but no purpose. Instead of being purposefully guided toward the posterior pole, they were effectively lost at sea.
A lack of directionality, despite high velocity? That sounds like a perfect recipe for developmental failure. How did that molecular chaos translate into the actual fate of the cells?
The results were dramatic. If you remember, the control RGPs, the healthy ones, showed a good balance. About 39% were successful asymmetric divisions, PN. And only about 19% were the premature NN divisions.
Okay, so that's the baseline.
But when PCM1 was absent, the proportion of NN divisions, where both daughter cells just immediately became neurons, it skyrocketed to a staggering 49% of all divisions.
Wow, nearly half. So almost half the stem cells just quit their job early and differentiated. That's a catastrophe for development.
It is. You've burned through your entire supply of progenitor cells way too quickly. You don't have the builders left to construct the rest of the brain.
It really shows that PCM1 isn't just involved, it's absolutely essential for maintaining that stem cell pool.
Which led them to its key mechanistic role. PCM1 is basically the endosome switch and the construction foramen all in one.
Tell me more about that switch. What is PCM1 actually doing to that endosome delivery truck?
It's managing the whole prep and loading process. First, it makes sure the endosome is mature enough for its VIP cargo. It helps it transition from a Rab5B positive early endosome to a Rab11A positive recycling endosome. That recycling status is vital for getting the Notch ligand ready.
Okay, so it matures the truck.
And second, and this is the most important part, PCM1 is the foramen that assembles the full motor and GPS complex right onto the endosome surface. We know the endosome needs the engine, the dynein motor, and the GPS, the Part 3 polarity regulator, to get where it's going.
So PCM1 is making sure both the engine and the GPS are installed and working together before the endosome even leaves the depot.
Exactly. When PCM1 was missing, what they saw was that the endosomes often had either the GPS, PAR3, or parts of the engine like Delic-1, but they didn't have the crucial combination of both.
So they couldn't get coordinated polarized movement?
It's an all or nothing system. A high-speed engine without a map just leads to random movement, which is exactly what they saw.
And they saw this was conserved in the human cells too.
They did. In the human cortical organoids, PCM1 showed the same asymmetry, co-localizing with the human mother centrosome marker, CEP83, and it also preferentially localized with the recycling endosome marker, RAB11A, not the early one.
So the whole mechanism seems to be fundamentally conserved across vertebrates.
It strongly suggests it is, linking centrosome age to recycling endosome maturation and then directed movement.
When you put all that together, the model is so clear. PCM1 is the physical bridge. It takes the positional and the aging information from the mother centrosome.
And it translates that information into a delivery instruction for the Notch ligand endosomes. It makes sure those essential self-renewal signals get delivered only to the self-renewing daughter cell.
That's just profoundly significant for how we think about brain growth. It shifts the whole process of cell fate from being a purely biochemical event to a highly mechanical and structural one. The age of the equipment matters just as much as the molecular message.
And that significance extends directly into human health. This research immediately brings up the clinical relevance. For a long time, human PCM1 has been implicated in various neuropsychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and even some cancers.
That 49% NN division rate, that premature burnout of stem cells, that has immediate implications, doesn't it? If you lose your progenitor cells too early, you could end up with a severe structural defect, potentially conditions like microcephaly, where the brain is significantly smaller.
Absolutely. This direct link between disrupting PCM1 and this catastrophic overproduction of neurons in their model, it provides a tangible cellular mechanism that could really underlie these developmental brain disorders.
So understanding how this specific trafficking complex is regulated could, down the line, unlock therapeutic targets.
It could. To help maintain that progenitor pool when it's needed, it connects a structural failure, the oldest part of the cell failing to coordinate its delivery trucks, to a macroscopic neurological outcome. It's a powerful connection.
It really is. So looking ahead, what are the next big questions this research opens up?
Well, while they've shown how PCM1 drives the endosomes toward that posterior pole, we still don't really know the precise extrinsic signals that set up that polarity in the first place.
What's the environmental cue that tells the RGP to align itself that way, to put the mother centrosome on the posterior side to begin with?
Exactly. It seems like the environment dictates the structural setup, and then PCM1 executes the molecular delivery based on that setup. We need to find that initial signal.
Now, what about other cell types?
That's the other big area. We have to explore this mechanism in the context of the mammalian brain. Mammals use a cell type called intermediate progenitor cells, IPCs, which are essential for amplifying the number of neurons. They're absent in zebrafish.
So we need to know if PCM1 plays a similar role in managing cell fate in the cells that are responsible for the massive expansion of the human cortex.
We do. That's a critical next step.
Okay, let's unpack this one last time just to crystallize the core idea. PCM1 is the molecular linchpin. It physically connects the structural asymmetry of the centrosome, specifically that ancient mother centrosome, to the movement of these crucial Notch signaling molecules inside the cell.
Right, it's the coordinator.
And this precise orchestrated connection ensures that neural stem cells divide properly, maintaining that self-renewing progenitor pool. Without PCM1, the delivery fails, the stem cells prematurely differentiate, and you get a serious developmental imbalance.
It's the whole story.
So what does this all mean? The fate of a dividing brain cell is not some random draw. It's a tightly choreographed decision based on the age and the location of its internal parts. And this raises a really fascinating, broader question for you to think about. If the mother centrosome's age can dictate the fate of a daughter cell in the brain, what other fundamental decisions in cell biology, from aging to disease, are governed by the inheritance and the precise location of the cell's oldest organelles? This episode was based on an open access article under the CCBY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Stay.